happy to welcome back to the program the folks from Father Bill's in Mainspring here in Quincy for a little update on how things are going at the Yawkey Housing Resource Center and beyond. So Pat Ronan is with us once again. Good to see you, Pat.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me. Yeah. I think it's been since the spring we connected.
Sounds about right. Yeah, so I thought it was a good time to have you come on back in. First of all, remind folks that the center exists and what it does. And second of all, to let you talk about anything that you might need this season. So first of all, how are things going?
Well, so the Yawkey Housing Resource Center opened in November of 2023, so it's been open over 2 years now. Essentially, for those who are familiar with Father Bill's in Mainspring, for many years we had Father Bill's Place, which was the shelter in the old DMV on Broad Street. And then as part of our new model to end homelessness, we want to transition to more of a day center model. So replacing the overnight shelter, sort of reactive approach with like a more, you know, cost efficient, really more, you know, upstream service where people can come to us during the day, they can stay during the day. We provide resources, not only our own case management, but we partner with other agencies across the city and the region to help people deal with the crisis that led them to coming to our shelter. And so, yeah, we've been open now for over 2 years. And to be honest, 2025 has been a really difficult year for our mission, really challenging, both in terms of the population surging at our shelters. Over the past year, we've had an average of 340 people staying at our Quincy and Brockton shelters combined. Mm-hmm. That's up 50% over 2 years. Mm. That is a massive jump, and in Quincy alone, what does that mean? So basically, we really saw our peak at the Yawkey Resource Center over the summer. We had as many as 180 people sleeping in the one building there on Broad Street, to the point where for the first time in our agency's history, we actually had to turn people away.
Wow.
Never happened. Made during COVID, we had some headcount limitations, but we always had other accommodations, and you know, because of the assistance that came in through the state and federal government. But we were actually in Brockton and Quincy for the first time having to say we are at capacity. And usually, most nights we could offer a bed at the other location, so we were never having to close the door. But some people don't want to go to the other location. So it's been really challenging. So you have that. And I think what we have is a changing landscape at the federal government level, which has certainly sort of rattled our foundation a bit in terms of what funding we can count on for our housing, which ultimately is what we're all about, is creating those long-term housing solutions. And so between the local need increasing and the reliable government funding being less reliable, we are in a position where we're relying on our community more than ever.
Yeah.
So this is a good time to have us on, so thank you.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. So you don't often think of the summer months as being critical months for shelters, right? You think of that in the winter months when folks are trying to get out of the cold. What do you attribute the increase to over the summertime?
Well, I think generally, I think we see more people who are able to find other housing accommodations, whether it's couch surfing, staying with family or friends during the winter months. We also see more people who are willing to sleep outside during the spring and summer months. So you might have people who come in on some nights, they might sleep outside on other nights.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's totally, and that's really been the trend here for a few years running, whereas pre-pandemic we saw those spikes usually in the winter time where we were getting our highest numbers, you know, starting in October, November, and going up, peaking in February. We're seeing now really like July, August, September, like this past September, those were the nights where we had to be like, we're at capacity in this location.
And so, why, Pat? And do you know why?
In terms of why are there more people in need?
Especially that time of year.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, like I said, it's really people, I think, don't have as many maybe accommodations
options
elsewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like evictions go up in the summer or anything like that.
Yeah.
It really is more, I think, when the cold weather comes, and we're talking about life or death when you're staying outside.
Yes.
I think generally, you know, you find a way to maybe you stay somewhere indoors. And frankly, I mean, staying in the shelter during the cold months too, you're guaranteed essentially to be staying in overflow. So you're on a mat on the ground, yeah, or you're, you know, sitting down in a table for the night because yep, we're in warming center mode. Yep. So I think there is a little bit of, it's the cold and flu season in the winter.
Yep.
So the winter months are certainly, may not have the same numbers as we've been seeing in the summer, but operationally with the temperatures where they are, the people's health the way it is, it can be a bit more stressful to be staying in a shelter during the winter months.
I see, okay. So the Yaqui Resource Center does still have an emergency shelter, right?
It does.
Okay, what's the capacity of that?
So we have 130 beds,
okay,
but we're really more in like the 160 to 170 people per night.
Okay.
So we're always putting mats on the ground every single night. And when we have, when we're over fire code in our dining hall, we have to convert to a warming center model, which is essentially people have to sit down at a table. They can't technically lay down and fall asleep,
right,
because it's a warming center.
Right, yeah, so they're just there awake for the night to stay warm, right? Yeah.
And it's really, really, really challenging.
I'm sure.
Because essentially those spots, whether it's a bed or a mat on the ground or sitting down at a table,
yeah,
is done via like a lottery system.
I see.
And so if someone is elderly and we have an increase in elders, 20% of our shelter population are elders. Mm. And so a decade ago, that share was 8%. So we're seeing more people who are coming to us, you know, in their later years with more physical disabilities, with more health conditions. And so if someone is finding out that they're going into shelter and they have to stay at a table and sit up, and that's incredibly uncomfortable for an average person with no physical or health issues.
Right, yes.
But that's where we're at. And this is, I know you asked earlier, how do we attribute the increase?
Yeah.
But I'd say overall, I mean, we have a housing crisis that continues to not be resolved.
It's been discussed at the state level ad nauseum, right? And there have been several attempts to alleviate it. The ADU option now for folks to create accessory dwelling units, trying to even streamline that even more. So do you think that is one part of the puzzle that could answer the question?
Yeah,
yeah.
I think anything helps.
Yeah.
More housing means, hopefully that means more affordable housing, because
right,
if you have more options, you have a cheaper option. I think you got to bring more units onto the market.
Yeah.
The population we serve is the 0 to 30% area median income.
Yep.
So really the poorest of our neighbors, those who don't have any earned income, those who are on fixed incomes, mm-hmm, I mentioned elders, people who are just maybe collecting, you know, a monthly social security
yep,
in retirement.
Yep.
A lot of the units that are coming on aren't having necessarily a direct effect
yep,
on those
on
people.
That population.
At
right,
least in the next few years, like I'm sure there'll be a trickle down effect
right,
with more units on the market. But it's really our projects and NeighborWorks projects mm-hmm, and affordable housing developers. We are getting funding from the state to create units specifically for our population. So that's where I think you need to see more of that,
okay,
if you're going to truly help the shelter census
yeah,
go down.
And a lot of that involves rehabbing existing housing, right? There's not, especially here in Quincy, it's kind of built out for the most part, right? So it's taking properties that are maybe not in the best condition, purchasing those, rehabbing them, and making them more affordable, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, if you look across the country, there's a lot of innovative stuff going on, and there's, you know, in Houston, and there are much more rural places that can just like have a swath
spread
of land
spread out, right? Yeah,
and it's remote, mm-hmm, and they can put out a bunch of units mm-hmm, with one development. And in Massachusetts, we're very built out.
Mm-hmm.
In Greater Boston, we're especially
certainly,
built out.
Yeah.
So one thing we've been doing at Father Bill's is finding any opportunity to convert existing any sort of existing infrastructure into housing.
Yep, yeah. I know, and part of the Yaqui Resource Center model was also to create permanent housing there, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so how's that working?
It's great. I mean, we have 30 units
okay,
there in Quincy. At the Broad Street housing is sort of what we call it.
Okay.
And that's completely separate. You'll see it when you look at the Housing Resource Center. There's a building that's actually a story taller than the Resource Center itself. That is a separate building with 30 units. So people who are not shelter guests, but who are actually tenants, many of them either stayed in shelter or were sleeping outdoors.
Right.
And they're considered our most vulnerable, you know, highest risk.
Yes.
Having the hardest time finding mainstream housing.
Yes.
So those are the people we prioritize for our permanent housing.
Sure. And they're given supportive services, right, to be able to live independently.
Yes. Yeah. And that's really the key part, is not just the housing and not even just the permanent part of it, but the supports. So we have a case manager who meets regularly with our tenants. And you know, what are some of the barriers that maybe could contribute to them maybe being at risk of homelessness again?
Yes.
Do they need to get hooked up with the doctor?
Yep.
Do they qualify for benefits that they may not be aware of? Just really sort of navigating some of those other factors, you know, because stable housing can bring stable living, but it's not as simple as just having the housing and the key. Our case management is helping kind of navigate those day-to-day life things that happen that can throw a curveball and really cause another crisis if you don't have the support.
Right. So is that portion of the center at capacity? Is it full right now?
Yes.
It is.
So we have the 30 units, and we're, you know, they're fully leased. And we're proud to say that, you know, 99% of our units, we have over 750 across the region. 99% of the units, people are staying housed for at least a year.
Wow.
93% are staying housed for at least 3 years. Mm-hmm. So we truly are providing a stable, long-lasting environment. We actually have a project in the works in Quincy. It's in partnership with NeighborWorks on Quincy Street. There is going to be a development where three existing buildings will be demolished and replaced with a new, brand new building with 24 units.
Right.
We're proud to be working with NeighborWorks on that.
So that type of model seems to be more the answer, at least to the immediate needs, right, of rehousing folks who are homeless.
Yes. Right. I mean, we have a plan really to build on, you know, with partners like NeighborWorks
yes.
and our own. Like, we recently held a ribbon cutting for the old Stoughton Motel. We're converting into 24 units of efficiency apartments.
Okay.
At the new resource center in Brockton.
Similar model to Quincy,
similar,
right?
Yep, yeah. 32 units there.
Okay. All right.
And then we have the 24 in Quincy.
Yeah.
We're also going to be adding on another 29 units at an existing Brockton facility. So we're picking up, you know, through these projects, 25 to 30 units per year.
Right.
It can't solve the problem of homelessness, but ultimately, like, that is a huge part of the solution. And, you know, ultimately, if someone is housed, it's, again, it's not just having a warm place and a place to have privacy and dignity, but we've seen that it truly can make the difference between life and death.
Mm-hmm.
We have one tenant who now lives in Quincy in our permanent housing, who, because they were in shelter, they were in need of an organ transplant and could not be on the list because they didn't have a permanent address.
Really?
So now they have a permanent address through Father Bill's and through one of our housing units, and sort of means they qualify to get on the transplant list.
Wow.
But in a nice way, actually, her health has improved so much being housed that, like, I think she doesn't need the full transplant. It can be sort of a partial.
So it was the stress of being homeless probably that partly contributed to the illness, right? Yeah.
I mean, you did the weather report earlier, and just looking at those temperatures, when you leave your home in the morning and go to your car, I think we can take for granted, like, oh, that's a miserable trip. But,
right.
you know, I think we have to remember that there are a couple hundred people in our region alone who are experiencing that at just a whole different level, because it's not just in transition from their car to their home.
No, it's just uncomfortable for us, right?
It's where they have to spend most of their time, or where they may be sleeping tonight.
It's their life situation for them, yeah. Is it mostly individuals? Are there any families as well that are being impacted?
Yeah.
There are, yeah.
Yep, so the family shelter situation, as you probably are aware, I mean, a few years ago, we had the influx of, you know, migrants who came to the state, and 2023, we really started to see some families sleeping outdoors at the Wollaston T station. Just heartbreaking that was happening. And to the state's credit, I mean, we really tried to get as many people in shelter as we could. Now that we've seen that we're not dealing with that influx anymore, we're seeing though that the need locally from families that are from Massachusetts is still as it was before that.
They didn't go away, right?
It didn't go away.
Yeah, right.
And so actually we're starting to see for the first time, at least over the last 20, 30 years, we're seeing reports and our staff's hearing from families that are staying in vehicles. So yes, it absolutely is. Fortunately, we're not encountering many children who are sleeping out in the elements, but like if it's couch surfing, if it's a vehicle, if it's an RV, that absolutely has to be unacceptable for our community, for our state, for our country, to be in a place where there are children who do not have a bed to sleep in tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of needs, Pat, some immediate needs that you'd like to let folks know about at the center.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not as fun when you to say we need cash donations. But
no, but it's the most helpful, right?
It is. It gives us the most flexibility, and truly every amount makes a difference. You know, if you can donate $10 or $20 or $100, that goes toward meals that we can serve at our shelter. Last year alone, 350,000 meals were served between our Brockton and Quincy location.
Wow.
And a lot of those came through volunteer service, whether it was people buying meals and bringing them to the shelter, or they're donating money and we're able to then
stretch the
dollar.
Good point, too. If you're not able to make a financial donation, you can volunteer your own time, donate your own time, right?
Yes. We are always in need of volunteers in our kitchens in Brockton and Quincy. People often ask, like, well, you know, if my son or daughter are looking for community service, we have group projects too. You can go to one of our housing projects and do a landscaping project. You can get real creative. At one of our family shelters, there's a local high school student who is leading basketball classes with some of the kids who are staying there. So we really want to see, what time do you have? What talents do you have?
Right.
How can we customize this volunteer experience?
Make it a good fit, right? Yeah, for everybody.
For everyone. And then in terms of in-kind needs, I mean, certainly with the winter, hand warmers, winter gloves, and then really the basics, t-shirts, underwear. I mean,
hygiene items, right?
Exactly.
For sure. Yeah.
Because that's an item that we must, not only through the state contract, provide at our shelter, but it's something that that we need to provide, and people who donate that, especially in bulk, you can buy it off Amazon. Mm-hmm. We have our own Amazon wish list. You can really, really, really help us out, because if we're not having to buy all these t-shirts and hygienic items, that money is going to maybe be put up a family for a night or two when they wouldn't be staying outside.
Yep. We're putting up all your contact information for folks to get more information and to reach out. Always appreciate the update, Pat. Thank you so much. Have a happy holiday season.
You too. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.